it's almost like going for a job interview. Even if you don't have direct experience, you need to make the person feel comfortable with hiring you. Same goes with the loan, is that even if you don't have direct experience, what business, what skill set do you have that's transferable? And also, who's going to fill the void of having direct, let's say, SEO experience or direct experience in the space?
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, last week we aired the episode with Shaquille Prasla, and we started out the episode with me basically having you fess up to the fact that I have the number one most downloaded and listened to episode.
You're amazing, Mark. Let's just say it right now. You're incredible.
But you're right on my coattails. You're right on my coattails with Steven Spear. And at the risk of becoming a retread podcast where all we do is bring back our top guests, we are having back one of our top guests this week again.
Steven Spear. That's right. He's an SBA lender, which is interesting in that the top two podcasts that we have been about buying online businesses. And we're brokers that sell online businesses. But hey, look, you are amazing. And you started this company 11 years ago, and your focus was education and helping buyers understand the process and helping them as much as the seller. So it's worked. And the fact that our top two podcasts are about buying online businesses has proven out that theory. We had Steven back because, you know, last year there were a lot of changes in the SBA policies and guidelines. The dollar amounts came down a little bit. Seller financing wasn't required on certain deals. And we recapped some of that and we reviewed the process both for if you're a seller, what you need to do to get yourself in good shape to be SBA pre-qualified. And if you're a buyer out there looking to build that portfolio of businesses or buy your first one, what you need to do in order to connect with someone like Steven and get yourself in a position to best be able to act quickly when that perfect business comes along.
So yeah, these rules do update on a yearly basis, but fortunately this year, it doesn't sound like there's a ton of new changes. That said, there's a lot of good information in this podcast because we get these questions over and over and over again about what does it take to qualify? And I think one thing that, I know we talked to Steven the other day as a company, we had him and a couple other SBA lenders come into the company and just—
Yep, Bruce from Radius Bank, yep.
Yeah, Bruce from Radius Bank. You know, I think it's important for people to understand that there's SBA guidelines. Okay, that's one thing. But then outside of the SBA guidelines, there's individual bank guidelines as well. And to understand that even though these rules and these guidelines that we're going to cover in this episode might be out there, they're not hard and fast when it comes to finding an individual lender. Did you cover any of the those guidelines from Steven's group on this podcast?
Yeah, we went over some specific things that he looks for and his firm looks for. He's with Bank One now, or I'm sorry, First Home Bank. But, you know, some of the topic that we touched on the podcast, and even when we talked to him separately, and that you and I talk about, is why is it important to pre-qualify your business for an SBA loan? Sellers may be thinking, well, it doesn't matter. Why should I do that? And the answer is because it casts a broader net. And not a broader net of buyers. There are definitely some buyers out there that only want to use SBA funds because they only have 10 or 15% to put down. And then there's another pool of buyers that could stroke a check for $1-3 million, but they're building that portfolio like Shaquille and using SBA money. So they're only putting 10 or 15% down each time. So I think it's really important from a seller standpoint to understand the value of clean financials and getting prepared so you're pre-qualified for an SBA loan. And from a buyer standpoint, it's a great way to go if you're comfortable with that option.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into the episode. Let's find out what's changed in 2019 and then also recap some of the rules and some of the things that both sellers and buyers should know about SBA loans.
Let's go to it. Hey folks, it's Joe from Quiet Light Brokerage. Today, I have one of our top 10 guests back for 2019, Mr. Steven Spear. Welcome back, Steven. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, I want to go through all of the SBA lending practices, what it takes to qualify for a business, what buyers should be looking for. And also want to get an update on you and your team. I think you made some changes in 2019, I'm sorry, 18, and want to cover those as well. But for those that have not listened to you in the podcast in the past, can you give us a little summary, a little background on yourself?
And so I had the e-commerce lending team at First Home Bank. First Home Bank happens to be located in St. Petersburg, Florida. My team and I lend throughout the country. As a matter of fact, very few of our loans are actually in Florida, but I made a transition a couple of months ago with the privilege of being able to grow my e-commerce team and provide a level of support as we go into the new year. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's exciting. I know that we've done a number of deals together and you've done a lot of work with Quietlight and some of the other website brokerage firms. How big is your team going to get to? Where are you at now and how big are you going to be compared to where you were before?
So my team comprises of four people, myself, a gentleman named Bill Van Deven, who is kind of my right-hand man, along with my underwriter and closer. So I'm pretty excited about that. I plan to add an additional person in Q1 and another person who I have identified for Q2. So I plan to have three people do what I do. In other words, myself and two support, and then stick with my underwriter as well as the closing team.
That's huge. I always worried about you getting hit by a bus. Now you can get hit by a bus and we'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, my wife would love to hear that. So
we don't want her listening to the podcast. She just buy a bus and start driving around looking for you. That's great, man. That's great. You know, one of the things that I want people listening to this to understand is that we've dealt with a lot of SBA lenders over the years, and you're not a banker. You don't come across as a banker. You don't have certain boxes that you must absolutely check every time, and you speak our language and you hang out with e-commerce entrepreneurs, which is great. Let's talk a little bit about what it takes to qualify for an SBA loan from the sell side of the business. What do you look for from a business? When I send you a listing and say, hey, Stephen, will this qualify? What things are you looking for?
Well, first, I'd like to, obviously I request financials. So first, what I look for is, what type of business is it? Is it FBA driven? Is it 3PL? Or do they provide their own fulfillment? So I look at that. I look, if it's a product-based business, I look at number of SKUs, type of product. I really do dive into that because, you know, one thing I try to avoid is having, you know, trying to finance a single product business. That's difficult. So that's one thing I look at. So once I get past that, I really kind of dive into the financials. When I mean financials, you know, the holy grail of financials are the tax returns. So for example, now that we've entered 2019, I look for tax returns for 2017, maybe 2016. Year, solid tax return for 2017, and solid year-ending financials for 2018. And as we continue down the path of Q1, obviously 2018 tax returns. So basically, back to your question, a ramp up in 2016 of the business, solid year 2017, and a strong trailing 12 month or strong.
Lots of people listening that are on their business and said, hey, that's not a problem. I've got tax returns. Everybody files tax returns. And then they give you a tax return and it's commingled with four other businesses that they're selling. And they're only selling one. I'm sorry, four other businesses that they run and they're only selling one. That's a problem, isn't it? The commingling of multiple businesses under one tax return.
That is a problem. And unfortunately, it's a problem that seems not to go away despite your best effort and your team's best effort, as well as my team's best effort. They just seem not to follow that advice. So that is a challenge. Now, I do, with that coming up so often, I do have a set of things I'm able to put in place. For example, I direct the seller back to his or her accountant and be able to income streams and expenses be done in a professional manner. It can't just be QuickBooks. And I've been able to still get financing for businesses that do have commingling within the tax return.
Does it just take a little bit longer to get those worked out and close?
It does take longer. Generally, it adds roughly 2 months to the entire process.
Whoa.
It does take time, depending on the responsiveness of the accountant. especially as we enter Q1 and they start working on returns and start getting buried because that's their busy season. It does take a little bit of time, but it's not something that's not doable. Biggest recommendation I have, either if you're, you know, thinking about selling a portion of your business now, is to get on that and have your accountant provide or put together what are called consolidated financials. And basically what we do is we take the tax return and compare it to the consolidated financial, which show a delineation of the different businesses and we're able to move forward.
Okay. So for the sellers out there listening to that and going, well, I don't have to have an SBA buyer. I can just sell to a cash buyer. You're absolutely right. There's a ridiculous amount of money out there in the landscape of people buying online businesses. The reality is, though, that you want to cast as broad of a net as possible for potential buyers. And we see this, you know, over and over again. Somebody that's from another country that is selling a business, if it's a multi-million dollar business, but you're not U.S. based, not filing U.S. tax returns, it is more difficult to sell because the buyer pool is not as large. There are buyers out there that I know personally that have the ability to stroke a check for $5 million, but they're smart and they don't want to. They want to, you know, keep as much money as they have, as they can, and buy multiple businesses and maybe use someone like Steven and SBA lending and only put down 10 or 15%. So you do cast a broader net if you can do the consolidated financials. If you're just starting off in business, your best approach is to have one LLC for that, you know, line of products that eventually you may sell. We've had, you know him well, Syed Balki on the podcast as well. And Syed has a number of different businesses. And every time he says, okay, I'm done with this one, we're able to list it and sell it very, very easily. And the last one, I think we did cash. Actually, I think we did two SBA loans. And it was very easy because he files separate tax returns for each business. That's the ideal situation. How do you feel, Steven, about someone selling business and they're coming to you with Excel spreadsheets for their profit and losses versus QuickBooks? You don't really care about that. You're looking at the tax returns and a P&L anyway that's in Excel format, right?
And primarily, you know, if we're talking just a single business, single returns, single P&Ls, yeah, that is fine. So that's not a problem at all. Obviously, the more accounting is all about substance over form. It's kind of an accounting term. That is true, but you know, it can't be handwritten or something very unprofessional. I mean, because ultimately, you know, underwriters look at that. Gosh, it's kind of thrown together. It doesn't make much sense. It's not done, you know, by someone who knows how to do a P&L or a balance sheet. But as long as it looks presentable, that's fine.
Well, you and your team are betting on the future success of the business. So first, you want to see that the business is run properly. And if somebody's not using QuickBooks or Xero or some form of accounting software, it's an indication that it's not being run in as professional a manner as possible, right? So that, you know, okay. And the buyers look at that way as well. And I could tell you from a brokering standpoint, when you're using Excel spreadsheets for your financials and commingling, it's much more difficult to get maximum value for it because no matter what, things are missed. I had a call this morning where, you know, there was several thousand dollars that was buried inside of a marketing budget that was actually a personal thing. We had to dig very, very deep to find it. And that times three adds, you know, $9,000-$10,000 onto the value of the business. So ultimately, your view is, you want to make a safe investment in financing this loan and make sure there's a success down the road for the future. Is there a some sort of multiple barrier that is a ceiling for you? Is it, how do you, it's, I think it's, you call it debt to income ratios, right?
Debt service coverage. So let's say, So debt service coverage is primarily what we look at. We really don't look at a EBITDA multiple. I mean, we do and we don't. The valuation piece, definitely we look at that. But primarily, we look at a debt service coverage. So for example, if the overall loan is the obligation, annual obligation for a loan is $100,000, let's say. The bottom line number on the tax returns needs to reflect at least $115,000, giving us a debt service coverage of 1.15. Now, a lot of sellers run some of their personal expenses through the tax returns. I'm able to add those back. So you can't just take a tax return and say, okay, it's a bottom line $115,000. You got to take whatever the bottom line number is, and then there are add backs. Standard add backs would be interest deduction, depreciation, amortization. Those are primarily some of the add backs. Some of the seller discretionary add backs might be, especially if it's an FBA setup type business where there's rent expense. Well, the new owner probably will just run it as a home-based business, so I'm able to add that back. Some people tend to run their car expenses through, even though it's a home-based business. I'm able to add that back. And any one-time expenses, you know, revamping of a website or, other ancillary things that are one-time, I'm able to add those back. And then I take that number and determine if it meets that debt service coverage.
Do you pull those from our spreadsheets? Because we have add backs. And do you look at those or do you dig into the tax returns for the add backs? I think it would be hard to find them in tax returns.
Yeah, so both. I look at what you provide in terms of your spreadsheet, but some of those I'm not able to add back. Like typically insurance, it would be really hard. It'd be hard fought to have an underwriter add back insurance expense, for example.
But shouldn't be added back. I agree. If it's an expense that's it's going to carry forward, it's shouldn't be an add back.
Generally, though, so of your add backs, the ones you reflect typically on your spreadsheet, I'm able to add most of those back, and those I use that spreadsheet as a roadmap, but I do go into the tax returns and make sure that the numbers are aligned, and then I'm able to really dig into the tax return and see if there's any other type of add backs that I'm able to.
Okay. So from a seller's perspective, they want to do the best they can not to commingle multiple businesses under one tax return, obviously have tax returns. Have a good financial so we can dig into the add backs and make sure that debt to income ratio is going to work. Anything else that they should be considering? I think you said, obviously you don't want a business that's balanced on just one SKU doing 90% of the revenue. Ultimately, the bottom line is you want to make sure that the bank's going to get paid from the person buying the business and it's going to be a success, right?
Yeah. And another thing we look at is if there's any sort of declining revenue or a blip. Where, for example, I had a client last year completely whiffed Chinese New Year and didn't have inventory to sell. Didn't have the inventory to sell, so there was a blip. But I was able to explain that to an underwriter, and obviously with the new buyer in who's I felt that his business acumen might be a little bit higher, he was able to avoid any blips in the coming, this month, for example. So it's also an explanation there. The key for sellers is, even if you're not considering selling your business now, get these things in place so when you go to sell, you're going to get the most amount of sales price of your business. I have a lot of sellers come to me and it's kind of like they want to list now and their financials are a disaster now. So I recommend that buyers kind of get on the ball. Maybe it's a New Year's resolution to fire your current accountant and hire a good one. And to really get the financials in place and, put certain financial things in place now will pay dividends in the future.
Yeah, I refer people to certain e-commerce bookkeepers, two or three of them on a regular basis and have them go back, they'll go back in this case to 2019 and import all the bank statements and vendor invoices and everything and get things updated and accurate in QuickBooks. It actually helps the CPA do their job better. On a go-forward basis, it's the best thing in my experience for a decent-sized business to use somebody else. Let them focus on the bookkeeping and you focus on running the business and doing, driving revenue and maximizing profit. I think that's really, really important.
Oh, absolutely. And the return on that investment, Joe, I mean, you had a podcast recently.
10 times.
The return on that investment's enormous.
It's incredible. I've seen it happen firsthand where we've had P&Ls in Excel spreadsheets and a deal fell through three or four times. And then the guy took the same information, hired a bookkeeper, they put it into QuickBooks, and we sold the business for $50,000 more than I think we had, again, three or four LOIs, and it sold quickly, which was fascinating. It was a fascinating study. Let's talk a little bit, Stephen, about you, about e-commerce lending and your group. And how you think outside the box, because I want to talk about this a little bit. Not all lenders are created equal. You and I have a transaction going on right now where you had to really think outside the box. And I'm going to summarize it. And I want you to then just talk about what your thought process was and how you approached it. We have a buyer at Quiet Light Brokerage that, again, has the money to stroke a check, but he is in a situation where he's building a portfolio of businesses, and he's using the SBA lending process. Buyers can take up to what, $5 million in money, right?
$5 million.
So somebody could buy five, I guess that would be $1 million. They'd be putting in loans, right? They're liable for up to $5 million. So he's buying multiple businesses.
10 loans, it doesn't matter.
Okay, perfect. So he has two under letter of intent with Quiet Light Brokerage now, and mine is in the process first. And he's got the wherewithal, but I think he had some pretty sizable loans that threw off his overall debt to income ratio. How did you work that out?
So, and that definitely took a lot of out of the box thinking, in the sense that he has an Amazon loan, and I can't divulge too much personal information, but the monthly payment on an Amazon loan was staggering. It was five figures on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So you look at debt service coverage and throw in a very large five-figure monthly payment, threw all the numbers out of whack.
And this is on a separate business that he owns. Right, okay.
Because it does affect what's called global debt service coverage. So on a separate business that he owns, which happens to be online business,
right,
has a very large payment, and it was purchase of a bunch of inventory and financed it through Amazon. So it threw all the numbers off. So kind of had to dig deep and say, okay, how about if we refinance that debt, take that monkey off his, that large nut off his back, and be able to incorporate, be able to reduce that monthly payment and still get the new purchase done. And that's what I'm in the process of doing. His new purchase, his loan on his business acquisition, new business acquisition was just approved. And I'm in the process of refinancing his Amazon loan separately.
Now, the Amazon lending loans, they are very prevalent these days with Amazon-based businesses. And you and I have done, just for the record, content sites, SaaS businesses, all sorts of different things, certainly not just Amazon. But in this situation, this particular individual had several hundred thousand dollars in loans, and the money gets withdrawn out of their Amazon deposits. Do you recall what the interest rate was then, what his payments were, what the interest rate was, and compare it to what you're going to be able to do for him? I just want to emphasize you thinking outside the box and how much money you're going to save this guy on a monthly basis, because he's thrilled right now. I got to tell you, he's thrilled.
So his monthly nut with Amazon was $48,700.
Holy cow. Okay.
It's going to be a couple grand.
No way. $48,000 down to $2,000. That's amazing. Thank you for thinking outside the box. You're helping him, and you're helping a couple of the sellers of the businesses that we're doing deals on now. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and you touched on something really important. I do have, you know, a fair amount of buyers out there, actually currently 347 buyers out there looking for businesses to buy. And quite a few of them can easily stroke a check for a $2, $3 million business, but they're building a portfolio. So back to your comment about portfolios. A lot of buyers out there right now are building portfolios. They want to buy two, three, four different businesses, online businesses, over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. And they don't want to use up all their cash. And the fact remains is that when you're trying to scale a business, cash is king. You need cash to scale a business. You need to buy additional inventory. You need to grow it. And if you're cash strapped, it's really hard to grow an online business. So I'm helping several of those buyers accomplish that. So an SBA loan is not just for the person who needs a little bit lower barrier to entry. SBA loan's also for the person that can easily pay cash but chooses not to, to stay in line with his or her business goals.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the buyers a little bit and what you look for in a buyer. You and I have never had a situation where we brought a buyer, you said yes, and then it turned out they weren't qualified. But I had a situation a few years ago where I had a couple of Harvard MBA graduates. They literally just graduated a month before from Harvard. I got their master's in business, and they decided to partner on an investment in an online business. And they had some funds. One of the graduates had some funds from a parent. Went through the process, they were pre-approved from a different lender, and then underwriting said, these guys have absolutely no real-world experience. We're not betting, I think the deal was $2 million. We're not betting $2 million on these guys. Yeah, their pedigree is good, their education fantastic, but no. And the deal fell apart. What do you look for? Are you looking for real world experience? Is there a certain asset value that they need to have? How do you handle it when somebody comes to you? What do you look for?
So first, you know, I look at, I try to determine, and I do interview my buyers. So you refer them to me, I do interview them, as you know. And one of the first things I really touch on is experience. So first determining if they have direct experience or indirect experience. And then, as I mentioned in previous podcasts, you know, it's almost like going for a job interview. Even if you don't have direct experience, you need to make the person feel comfortable with hiring you. Same goes with the loan, is that even if you don't have direct experience, what skill set do you have that's transferable? And also, who's going to fill the void of having direct, let's say, SEO experience or direct experience in the space? So those two things I look at. So the person that has direct experience, pretty much a no-brainer. Person that doesn't have direct experience, it's putting together the narrative like, hey, underwriter, even though he or she doesn't have direct experience, they have indirect experience in these categories. And additionally, they're going to have support, be it a employee or a contracted employee, that little void.
Gotcha.
So I've never had a deal where an underwriter has said, gosh, you know, that's great, they went to Harvard, but they have no direct experience.
We had a situation, I'm going to name a name here, but I'm only going to use their first name, a guy named Rocky. Rocky was I think he was in his 60s, retired. And ran a general manager for some car dealerships up in somewhere in the country. I loved the guy. Thought he was amazing. Just, you know, as a broker, as a lender, you connect with someone. You're like, I want to help this guy. I want to find him the ideal business. Although honestly, I told him it's crazy. He didn't need to buy a business. He was retired. He was bored. He had plenty of money. I'm like, you're crazy. Just go play golf or something. But he ended up buying something from us, and he didn't have any direct online experience. You know, he was a GM for dealerships that, you know, they had websites, but he didn't run them themselves. I find there are a lot of people in the corporate world that are putting in 60 hours a week that look at the e-commerce entrepreneurs that are selling a business when they're working 20 hours a week and they're making more money and they want to live that life. They want to spend more time with their family, with their kids, travel. Are a lot of the folks that come to you these types of people? And is that indirect experience still okay?
Yeah, so to answer your question, yes, a lot are, be it Rocky or any other, they don't have direct experience. The thing about Rocky is that, first off, he's incredibly likable, incredibly well-spoken, and had a very strong resume. The guy was successful in his professional career.
Yeah.
Wasn't like somebody, you know, working at, you know, low skilled job. The guy ran car dealerships, which he was 60 hours. He was probably working 90 hours a week now, but the transferable skill set. And also he filled that void of not knowing, having direct experience in running online business, but was able to fill that void by bringing somebody in. So we felt very comfortable with that, and he ultimately was approved. And last time I talked to him, he's doing very well.
Yeah, I think he bought a business from Amanda. I didn't have one for him at the time, but Quietlight in general had one. And I think Amanda loved working with him as much as you did. So the likability factor that Rocky had, when buyers come to you, is that important? Do you have to like them to do business, or?
Well,
make a difference. They're human, right? Does it make a difference?
Yeah, they're human. So an underwriter is human. And if they have a good dialogue with the buyer, for example, Nathan was incredible as well.
Yeah.
One of the reasons Nathan's loan sailed through is because he was very well-spoken and had the incredible background to be successful. So, yeah, it does.
Okay, so we're gonna just touch on that thing that everybody knows, but they don't talk about. And that is, if somebody comes to me, somebody comes to you, and they want to buy a business, we want to sell you a business. But if you are 10 times more difficult than the next person, and they also want to buy a business, my client, my seller is going to say, okay, well, I've got an offer from each. Which one do you like more, Joe? Talk about the plus and minuses. And we've got to do that. And in your case, you just said you've got something like 354 buyers on your list. They're looking for a business. They're not buying it from you. They're buying it from the likes of Quiet Like Brokerage.
Right.
But you still have to work with them on a regular basis, and you still have to go through the process with them and be likable. Simple thing, guys, everybody listening, just be likable. Just because you've got the ability to stroke a check doesn't mean that you can push a guy like Steven around. There's lots of people that are trying to buy a business, lots of people that are trying to sell a business, and being likable is so, so key, because this is an online world. We're not sitting across the table from each other, and it makes a huge difference being likable in the process.
To kind of touch on that, I have a buyer who's been looking for a year and a half. Not to scare you buyers out there, but sometimes it does take a while, but he's not likable.
Okay.
And he was on a phone call. I was on it as well with the seller, and he was beating up the seller on the phone in front of me. Why I was on a call, I don't know, but, and the seller chose another buyer.
It's not hard. I'll talk from personal experience. When I sold my business, I remember being on one of these buyer conference calls. I had three or four. Jason Yellowitz here at Quiet Light sold my business for me back in 2010. And I had three or four calls with potential buyers before we went under contract and sold it. But I remember sitting, I was in the car on a call, and I'm sitting in the parking lot, and I've got this guy just belittling my business and talking about all the negative things. And I'm just, it's all I can do to end the call. It's, you know, to not end the call and to be polite. And it was really hard. And even if he made me a full price offer, all cash full price offer, I have to take into account, sellers have to take into account how difficult that particular type of buyer is going to be in due diligence and in the training and transition period. There's a courting a relationship. It ends at a certain period, but you're going to be in a relationship with that person, and you want to make that as pleasant and as enjoyable as possible. So being likable is critical, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
What are the top two or three qualities that you look for, aside from good financials from a buyer? Do they have to have a certain debt-to-income ratio? Do they have to have certain assets in order to buy a business?
I would say assets. It's more asset-driven, unlike buying a house. I think we definitely look at what's called post-closing liquidity. For example, when all the dust settles, is a person broke after closing or still has a fair amount of cushion? You know, so we definitely look at that. Is there outside income? Does he or the spouse have what I call a day job for outside income? That's another thing we look at. So those are two very important variables. You know, credit score is important, but it's not like buying a home where you get, you know, it really affects your lending terms. Pretty much you either get a loan or you don't get a loan in the SBA world. Credit is an issue. If the person is leading down with a ton of personal debt, that's something that we look at. Generally, that's a character. Someone's living beyond their means. That's generally not liked. So those are just some of the variables. And also, you know, what I look at is does this person have the skill set to be able to scale a business, or is the business going to go stagnant as it transitions over to him or her? So that's another thing we look at. But those are just some of the variables.
So when someone comes to you and says, I want to buy a business, part of what you do is you look at their financials, you look at all those variables, and you say, okay, great. You qualify to buy a business up to a certain amount. Is that the process? You say, okay, you give them a guidance in terms of you can buy something up to $1 million or $2 million or $3 million, something like that.
Yes. And a lot of the determining factor is based on do they have direct experience, indirect experience? So that's going to move the needle.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Secondly, post-closing liquidity. That's really what I focus on. If a person's trying to buy $1 million business, has to inject or put down 100 grand and he has 110,000 in the bank, that's not going to work. So we kind of have to move the needle down.
And in that situation, it's not that they don't qualify to buy a business, but in that situation, they wouldn't qualify for a $1 million business, maybe a $500,000 business.
Right. It would move the business, you know, the target price down a little bit.
Okay. So just let me clarify that. So that, you know, somebody has $110,000 and they want to buy an SBA business and put 10% down. For those listening, that's generally the number, 10 to 15% down. 110,000, you're going to be left with 10 grand. Not going to work. So you got to look at a $500,000 business.
Or 800, 750, something like that.
Yeah. And then you look at their their debt, what they have, what they need to live off of. And that smaller business is not going to cash flow as high, especially after the debt service alone. So you look at all of that and help them with what they're capable of buying, first and foremost, right?
Yeah. Most of my buyers have what I call a day job. So most of their, in most cases, their day job covers their personal debt. So that's rarely a real factor. Now, I do have an individual recently who didn't have a day job and had tons of personal debt. So that kind of, you know, blew her out of the water. But generally, you know, we do look at that. So again, back to post-closing liquidity, what I do is, so for all of you out there, once Joe refers a client to me for pre-qualification, I'm able to have an interview with that person on a scheduled call and ask questions. And also they provide me with what's called a personal financial statement. And then I'm able to, in most cases, issue a pre-qualification and give them a target amount. You know, in the case, in the example that we just went over, $800,000, for example. So, and then that person goes back to Joe and says, okay, I'm pre-qualified with Steven. He told me to look at businesses around $800,000. Let's go.
And then they have a path, which is the most important thing. Somebody that doesn't know what they're looking for, doesn't know what their buying capabilities are, is less qualified from our view. So one of the things we want you to do, folks, if you're out there as a buyer, reach out to someone like Steven and get pre-qualified so that it will help you narrow your focus. And then the next step is to look at as many listings as possible from the online world and figure out what you like and don't like about the business. When you find the right one, if it's a great business, you want to be in a position where you're already pre-qualified to act quickly. Because if it's a great business, guess what? Other people are going to be looking at it and making offers as well. Really important there.
Absolutely. Especially since there are a lot of buyers out there. And if you snooze, you're going to lose. So you need to kind of get your house in order before looking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 1,000%. So let's talk quickly about the qualifications of a buyer. Do they have to be a U.S. citizen?
They could be either a green card holder or a U.S. citizen living in the United States.
Right. Green card holder or U.S. citizen living in the United States. The business itself, does it have to be a U.S. citizen or a green card holder filing U.S. tax returns?
In most cases, yes, depending on the structure of the business.
Okay. There's always a sort of gray area in the situation.
Yes, it depends on the structure. You know, okay. On a different components. Is it a pass-through company of a foreign entity?
Right.
Things that does affect that answer.
Right. Okay. And then your business and the size of loans that you guys generally do, are we looking at, you're looking for $500,000 and up, 2-3 million. Where is your sweet spot in terms of lending?
So, you know, generally my personal loan floor, let's call it, is $500,000. But obviously if it's a client I've been working with and happens to, was looking at $800,000 businesses, but found one for $400,000, I'm a definite person. My average loan amount is about a $1.5 million range. So, and, you know, looking at my 2018 numbers, that's close to 60 million, 40 transactions. That's about that number. So.
Gotcha. I think 38 of them were directly with me, I think, right? No, I'm kidding.
41.
Hey, so you're loaning on the value of the business. And what about if it's an inventory-based business? Are you loaning for the value of the inventory as well? And then working capital. Do you always loan, give working capital money so that they've...
Always, yes. So very good topic here. So obviously I'm going to finance the business itself. I'm also, if the purchase price of the business does not include inventory, I finance the inventory, the on-hand inventory. And what I do is I work with you, Joe, in determining what that number is going to be at closing. So I finance that. I also include working capital. And that working capital, I generally work it into a loan in the sense that I'm able to include it and earmark it, not directly earmark it, but say, okay, of the $100,000 working capital, 50 is going to be for additional inventory above and beyond what's being purchased with the business. And the other 50 is going to be, you know, marketing campaign or advertising campaign. It could be for hiring support staff.
Okay. And then lastly, I want to talk about the term of the loans. We talk in 5 years, 10 years, 30 years. What are we looking at?
It's a 10-year loan. And of all those components, by the way, it ends up being all in one loan. It's not where you have separate loans for each. So it's okay. All incorporated into a 10-year loan, 10-year SBA loan.
Okay. And 5-6% interest rate, somewhere in that range, 5-7?
It's prime plus 2.75. Right now it's 8.25.
Prime plus 2.75. Okay. So for those that want to run their own numbers, 10% down, 10-year note, prime plus 2.75, do the math on that. The seller note in 2017 and prior to that, most of the transactions that we did with that did together, you required some sort of seller note. And that changed in 2018. So if we're got a business that's $1.5 million and somebody wants to put down 15%, are you requiring a seller note on a deal of that size or are you not anymore?
So prior, up to 2017, a seller note was required by the SBA, not by individual lender.
Okay.
So typically it was 10% down payment, let's call it, from the buyer, 15% from the seller, or vice versa in terms of the seller note, for a total of 25% down payment or injection.
Okay.
In 2018, the barrier to entry was lowered. The overall requirement, depending on the deal, is a minimum of 10%. In terms of what lenders require, some lenders require a seller note. We do not. Sometimes I incorporate a seller note to strengthen the loan, especially if the buyer does not have direct online experience. So, and it gives kind of the underwriter warm fuzzies in the sense that the transition will most likely go smoother if the seller has a little bit of skin in the game. So there are situations where I do incorporate a seller note for approval purposes.
So for buyers, sellers, even other brokers listening to this, this is, you know, you're hearing Steven say, I incorporate this or I incorporate that to help the underwriter feel better about the loan to make sure it goes through. What I do personally is when I have a deal that's pre-qualified by Steven or someone like Steven, when I get an offer on the business, A, I want to know if Steven knows who they are and if they're working with him, how they look qualification-wise. But B, I'm going to send the deal structure to you, Steven, and say, this is the deal structure. Is this going to float with your underwriters? And I think that's critical to the ultimate success of the loan and the transaction process, because the last thing that we want, it's happened once or twice, and I don't recall if it was with you or not, but where you've actually, no, it was with you, where the underwriter looked at something and they had to tweak it just a little bit, had to increase the seller note by, you know, 5% or something like that. That's not what we want to do. So now I run everything by you prior to having a letter of intent signed. I recommend everybody do that if they're going to do an SBA loan through Steven and e-commerce lending.
Absolutely. So that's a very good point. As we continue down the path of e-commerce lending, I am constantly tweaking the way I do things. And that's one thing I do is I vet really hard up front. So there aren't changes on the back end. Fortunately, some of my buyers don't vet the businesses that they're looking at prior to signing a letter of intent. It's a kind of an after they do that, they come to me and say, hey, I just bought this business and here's the deal structure. I'm like, well, that's not going to work. So
they don't do that with Quiet Light. They have to vet them, exactly, put them through the whole process. We require that conference call. because we don't want people to go under a letter of intent just to tie it up and then make a decision. We want them to make the decision, go under a letter of intent and close and go through that process. It just saves everybody a lot of time and hassle and makes
it really
the process smoother. Okay, any last thoughts about, you know, you want to share with buyers or sellers that are listening to the podcast today?
You know, in terms of sellers, even if you're not selling a business now, please reach out to me and Joe and have us put together a game plan, future sale. It's really, really important. Again, it'll pay dividends on the back end. And then for you buyers out there, reach out to me. I'm more than happy to pre-qualify you for a business. You can reach me at steven@ecommercelending.com. And first name is spelled with PH, steven@ecommercelending.com. Or call me, 813-766-4524.
Excellent. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Last thing I want to say is just to reiterate what you're talking about there with the sellers. And it's called Choose Your Pain. Choose Your Pain. Go through the pain of getting your financials in good shape now and having a great transaction and a sale, or don't do it and you're choosing your pain later because it's going to be difficult. You're going to be, your bank account's going to be in pain because you're not going to get as much value for your business. So make the choice and hopefully you'll choose that first one. It's not fun. It's not exciting, but it's the right thing to do. Do some valuation, exit planning, reach out to Stephen, reach out to anybody at Quiet Light. You can go to inquiries@quietlightbrokers.com. Myself, Mark, or anybody on the team is happy to help you, even if you're not planning to sell your business for another 2, 3, 4 years. That's what we're here for. Stephen, you're awesome as always. Thanks so much for your time. Look forward to a great 2019 with you.
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.